I think one of the narratives that started to emerge early on Tuesday was that the polls were wrong. But I'm not sure that I share in that sentiment. I think that there are lots of cases where I can see that we have margin of error level flaws. But if you go back and you look at the models at The Economist, at 538, you know, the kind of popular models that very carefully synthesize huge amounts of data, not many states that they were calling for Biden or Trump have reversed or gone in a different direction. Florida is the only one, but Florida, Biden's lead there right before election day was about 2 points. And he looks in Florida, he's behind 2 points. That's margin of error.
Or at least within normal polling error. Polling error is slightly different than margin of error. But, you know, it is true that in an average election, you have an average polling error. And polling error of 3% on either side, that's normal. And so I agree, Alex. So we're recording on Thursday. It's entirely probable that this election is going to hinge on Pennsylvania, that it's going to be the tipping point state, and then it's probably going to be the next state that gets called. And that's what was forecast in many of the models. Again, those models are based, I think, largely on polls, at least the main, most well-known ones. And yeah, it's a little bit abnormal that average polling error of 3 to 5 points would shift toward one side in three of the last general and midterm elections. Like, that's a little bit strange. And I'm sure that there will be kvetching about that and investigation into some of the reasons why that might have occurred. But no matter who wins, whether it's Trump or Biden, that polling error of 3% this time around, average polling error, of course, like you said, in states like Florida and maybe some other ones, there were bigger polling errors than 3%. But if you look at the whole election and an average error of 3%, because of course that there are a number of states where the polling error might be the other way, or there might not be much polling error at all. There's lots and lots of votes to come in places like California, New York, and Massachusetts, and even every state, really. I mean, the counting that you see on TV right now and that you hear about on the radio that's happening in Pennsylvania and Arizona, like, that same counting is going on in every state. It's just that the election doesn't hinge on those other states. And so the numbers and the percentages that we've seen that's necessary to call a state one way or the other by the media networks, that's not the final results. And so some of the early narrative about polling and modeling being so far off and causing 2016 levels of chaos, I think that that may be a little overblown when we get to the end of things. And I think that the reasons for that kind of outsized kind of media reaction comes from a few things. You mentioned Florida. Florida not only probably will end up having one of the biggest polling errors of any state, but it was also like the first state to get coverage on election night. And so for people that were really dialed in and tuned in, they saw that large polling error, and that colored the whole rest of the narrative. So you have some normal polling error, some states that are seeing like larger than normal polling error, Florida being the first one. And then you also have this thing, which we did hear a lot about. I'm not sure I internalized it fully or everybody else internalized it fully, but this like red mirage thing where the first votes that are getting counted and reported are the in-person election day votes. And then we're kind of waiting for the second, third, 10th batch of poll results from mail-in ballots and from early in-person ballots, like those things getting reported second, and that causing like a shift. So that's some of that we're still seeing kind of the results of in places like Pennsylvania and Georgia.
Here's another perspective. As close as this election looks, it's actually not close at all. Joe Biden he'll have 73 million plus votes cast in his name, which is the greatest number in the history of anyone running for president in this country, right? So it's not really a close election. It is close, but that's because of the Electoral College, which is a clear contravention of popular will. And we've talked about this. There's an active live debate over whether or not the Electoral College is problematic from the perspective of democracy. Critics say, you know, abolishing it would mean presidential candidates would only visit coastal cities, big cities where all the people live. But keeping the Electoral College means that those candidates only have to visit swing states in the Rust Belt or the Sun Belt. So it's not clear that we have optimized the balance between a tyranny of the majority and a tyranny of the minority. And I think there'll be active conversation moving forward. over what exactly the appropriate response is. I don't think that we're going to get 3/4 of the states to ratify a new amendment to the Constitution abolishing the Electoral College, but there's all kinds of things that state legislatures can do in terms of drafting laws that could, for instance, require electors to reflect portions of the vote as opposed to winner-take-all system. So I'm expecting the conversation about the Electoral College to kind of be revived, although as it seems likely the GOP will retain control of the Senate. And there's interesting questions we could raise if, as is at this point, I think probable, Joe Biden becomes the next president of the United States, but Mitch McConnell is the majority leader in the Senate. What does that mean? What are the prospects for the next 2 years until the midterm elections in terms of what kinds of things can we expect to see? But on the question of polls, I'll just say this, that I think that by the time all of the votes are counted, we're going to find that the sharpest models that we were looking at were pretty empirically correct, contrary to popular opinion, that there were a couple of mistakes, crucially a few in Florida. And I'll just say this, that polling is getting increasingly difficult. Even high quality surveys and polls, they get response rates of like 2%. That's their response rate. Okay, and so your sample size of a poll in Pennsylvania is 10,000 or something. You might put out an ad inviting people to fill out an internet survey, and of that 10,000 that you hope to sample, 1,200 might see the ad. Of that 1,200, fewer than 50 will click on it. And of the fewer than 50 that click on it, you might get 6 people that complete the survey. And then you have to take those data points and you have to weight them based upon demographic information and information regarding the identity of the people who filled them out. Now, what we know happened this year, as opposed to in 2016, is there were a lot of corrections to 2016 lapses in methodology. For instance, lack of a college degree became a significant variable in the outcome of 2016. And so it was weighted more heavily in all of the high quality polling done this year. Maybe it wasn't weighted enough. We don't know yet. But what we do know, ironically, polarization is making these elections easier to predict. But for the same reason, polarization is driving down response rates. I think as we get increasingly partisan, we also get increasingly less willing to participate in a poll or a survey that we deem to be partisan on the other side. Right? There's just so little trust in research methodologies that are coming from a side deemed to be or perceived to be of an opposing political camp. And I think that that's just making it really, really difficult to get the response rates that we need in order to get better precision. But that said, my bigger argument is that this is actually pretty close.
Alexander Hirsch teaches political science at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and Nate Bauer directs the University of Alaska Press. I'm Robert Hannon.